All right, let me see my make sure my levels are okay. So I'm not swallowing the mic here.
Search for Katoshi. There's like a million versions of it. There's a lot of open source ones.
Katoshi. Oh, Kato. Oh, with an R. Mr. Katoshi. The goal is to die.
Here, I'll play it. Here, you can hear it. Hold on. Turn yours off.
Oh, yeah, it's the exact same loop.
Yeah.
Oh God. Pretty yeah. Close, huh? All right. Do you want to intro it then? If you've noticed, I've actually been using these "Let's Think About Something" to go as intros because they tend to succinctly describe the topic at hand.
Yeah. No, I'll tie it into our movie thing.
Oh, okay. Good point.
All right. So when I was watching Scott Pilgrim, you know that scene where, and it's a major plot device in the movie, not just a one-off gag, but he grabs that extra life, you know?
Right.
And, you know, it's the kind of funny line, like, I'm getting a life or whatever, right. something like that. But that it turns out to be, sorry, spoilers here, that it turns out to be a major element of the movie. But it also made me think, like, I mean, that's great because, you know, it's a nod to retro gaming.
Yeah.
But
wait, why retro gaming?
Why retro gaming? Because games these days, you have only one life to live.
Interesting.
I mean, think about it. Think about any recent game that wasn't a throwback. You know what I mean?
Right.
So probably not like an iPhone pixel art game or something.
Right, right, right.
Or actually the Scott Pilgrim game itself.
Yeah, there's certainly lives in that one. Yeah.
But I mean, think of almost any modern game or any RPG, modern or otherwise.
Yeah.
You know, you've always had just one life there. And now, I mean, that kind of makes sense. I mean, as games become more realistic, I mean, the concept of having multiple lives, unless you're playing a game, you know, based in a reincarnation mythology, doesn't really make a lot of sense.
isn't that one iPhone game? Oh, what was it called? You were telling me about it, where you like play as your descendants.
Yeah. The Infinity Blade.
Yeah, so when you have multiple lives, it's actually literally multiple lifetimes.
It is. But for some reason, like, though this big, huge guy kills you, you somehow start with your dad's armor, like he's like sent it off to your family or something. I'm not sure how that works exactly.
Right.
But yeah, the multiple bloodlines in that game. And there was a game in the Phantasy Star series that also did that you played as your descendants.
Interesting. Okay, so, all right, I guess it's prudent to ask where the concept of having multiple lives came from in the first place.
And I think that's a really good question. And unfortunately, it's one that I don't know exactly who did this first, but it like so many other conventions that we have in our gaming, came from the arcades.
Yeah, that makes sense. The more lives you have, the more credits, whatever, yeah.
Well, exactly. And I mean, I can't say this for certain because I don't know, but my guess is that it's from a marketing thing. Like, one quarter gets you three guys, you know?
Sure.
Because, especially with games as hard as a lot of the games used to be, one try is not gonna last you very long. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
So unless you're having like the play choice machine that relied on the amount of money you put in, gave you a certain amount of time, or a sports game where it'll give you, you know, a round of the sport. You know, for these games, it was the number of tries you had to complete.
Sure, that makes sense. Especially, you know, when you're in an arcade and throughput's kind of important, you can have the same person staying at the station and not paying anything for long spans of time.
But, I mean, the very concept of having multiple lives, I mean, that when you think about it, that's kind of interesting. I mean, with a space shooter, it kind of makes sense, you know. You have three ships. That's how many you have to save the galaxy. You know, it could be a different pilot or something like that. It makes less sense in like Donkey Kong.
Well, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Where you have three identical twin Marios and maybe four if you get a good enough score. You know,
when they call it Mario Brothers, it's because there's just a lot of Mario clones. Actually, that's kind of literally true of Leisure Suit Larry, where every time you die, they push a new Larry off the assembly line and put him.
Oh,
right,
man, that was the greatest sequence. Yeah, I remember that. That was so crazy. But we'll talk about adventure games in a moment.
Sure, sure.
Man, that's such a good segue. You should have saved that. Should have kept that under your hat.
Well, maybe I could still. Well. Maybe not.
I'll give you a cue and you can bring up that exact same segue.
Okay, great.
Yeah, it's interesting that we kind of accepted this as how a game should be.
Mm.
That you have multiple guys. And for some reason, yeah. Even though I don't think very many games ever explicitly stated that they were lives,
right.
But I mean that's what's common, you know, they're commonly called.
Yeah, when it came over to console gaming, right? They would often port the arcade games, but then when they would make new stuff, they'd still keep that convention. Interestingly enough, even though it didn't really service the game type that you were playing necessarily. I'm trying to think of a good example. Can you think of one? Like you know, it was always in Mario because those were at least the original was an arcade game anyway.
Yeah.
So that's not too weird. But Zelda? Wait, I don't think the original Zelda had lives, but Zelda 2 certainly did.
Now that was weird because, and it disproves my earlier point of RPGs rarely having lives, you know. But yeah, that was an RPG that had lives. I think when you make something an action RPG, you can be a little more forgiven on that.
Yeah, yeah. But it puts you into this weird spot, though, where if you have a console and you're playing the game, the point is different than being in an arcade because you have access to that at any time. It tends to be multi-session. And so like trying to like run through it in one go isn't necessary anymore. So is it a play style at this point or is it just bad design? I can't really tell. Because I'm thinking like Battletoads, right? Battletoads, you only have so many lives, and it's like just those notoriously difficult racing sequences are like the bane of any gamer's existence.
Yeah, I think I think that's one of the reasons, why lives, you know, became what they were, because you had a lot of these games where it was one hit, you're dead.
Oh, God.
How unsatisfying would it be if you had to put in a quarter each time to have one hit? You know,
right.
You know what I mean? I mean, it's accurate. It's accurate, though, because, I mean, truly, you get shot with a bullet in the head, you're dead, you know? I mean...
Yeah, unlike you play Mortal Kombat, the new one, you can, like, have those X-ray moves done in a year or, like, have, like, a psi punch through your face, but you just keep fighting. Kind of not realistic.
Well, I do. But, it's interesting there. Mario did something very interesting with the mushrooms. Like, if you were the big Mario, you could get hit once and, you know, gets, you know. But, I mean, Mario still uses lives.
Yeah, which is kind of weird. Yeah.
There was a transition time, of course, where you had multiple lives and you also had a life bar. You know, when games are really quite difficult.
Right.
You know, you could get hit a few times, but you still had a number of lives. But that's kind of gone away to having like a life bar or like hit points.
Right, right. Like there's kind of these like several different levels. Like there's like different levels of damage you can have during a life. There's the lives themselves, and then there are continues, which are sort of another related but sort of different animal.
Continues are very interesting because that's another thing from from the arcade days. The continue is the insert another quarter thing. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Because, well, if we go back to the original games, I mean, really, really old games, when you put in another quarter, you started the game from the beginning, you know?
Yeah.
All the way from the beginning.
Yeah.
I mean, you had your three lives or five lives to beat the game. And if you could not beat the game within those, you started all over again. Then again, most of those games were, as we mentioned in our previous podcast, were unbeatable anyway. They just went until you died.
So I'm thinking that this culture, this mindset, this economic model was really the reason why we think that video games were so hard when we were kids and why we deride any of these easy kiddie games now that we're older. It's not just because games seem easier. It's because they literally are easier because they don't employ these tactics anymore. And I don't blame them because who would want to play Battletoads anymore, ever?
Oh, definitely. One of the hardest games I played. Now, I played it on the home version, so you have unlimited continues.
Right.
But King of the Monsters Part 2 is... I like the King of the Monsters series. Have you ever played this?
I've never heard of it before.
It's like an isometric rampage.
Oh, nice.
It's done by SNK, you know, King of Fighters series.
But, oh, okay.
You can play as like a Godzilla-like creature, you know.
Right.
Did I say Godzilla twice?
You might have.
I might have. Anyway, or, you know, all these different creatures. And you can beat each other up, and you can also, like, destroy towns. And you can throw theme park equipment at each other. It's quite fun. I like it.
Sounds pretty cool.
It is. It's a good game. You should look it up. I remember seeing it in the arcade, and I went, wow, Neo Geo, wow, which we'll get into another episode later. But
Right.
Great game. But King of the Monsters 2, pretty fun game too. But the end. Some arcade games used to do what was like a boss rush. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like before you can get to the final boss, you have to beat every other boss of the game in order.
Like a Mega Man.
Yeah.
It's like daring you to survive at this point because they all depend on lives, and you can get more of them in a lot of cases. But like you get to this point, you can't get any more, basically.
Yeah. Well, in this game, three more lives can be acquired by putting in another quarter, you know?
Okay.
And that's the thing. All this was doing was quarter munching, because no matter how good of a player you are, no matter how skilled of a player you are, the enemy is going to get in a couple hits, you know? And when you're fighting enemies, you know, this many, you're just throwing in money. Right. And then the actual boss had so much life. It just, like, as I said, I was playing it with infinite continues, okay? Mm-hmm. And I was using all special attacks because, you know, they fill up special bars and stuff, you know? And I'm just spamming buttons on this thing to try to kill this boss. And it still took me like a good 30 minutes. It's crazy.
Wow.
So a lot of these arcade games, yeah, just, you know, the continue was given as the way for an arcade operator to make more money because you wouldn't be going back to the beginning. Now, if you actually could beat a game in three credits, you know, your one quarter, that'd be horrible for the arcade, you know what I mean? Because it takes a while.
Right.
Like these Pac-Man champions or these you've seen King of Kong, right?
I'm sure I have.
Oh, Sean. Sean. Oh, we've got to do another confession episode now.
Apparently.
Okay, you haven't. Okay. Okay. Well, it's about professional, well, not professional, but setting world records for games.
Yeah.
Okay,
I know what it's about. I just haven't seen it.
But like these games of Donkey Kong would go on for hours, and you know the game had to be played on one credit. You know, now of course your average gamer wasn't doing that well. Most games would probably be measured in, you know, single digits of minutes. You know,
right.
But when you had someone that good, you know, the arcade operator does not like that, you know. Right. Better to have some kind of unwinnable situations but requiring the use of more quarters. So lives, when about did people stop using them?
Now that's a really fuzzy area. I'm just trying to think of games that don't use them, and I'm mostly thinking about games I've been playing recently, like any of the BioWare games. You know, for instance, Mass Effect, you're dead when your main character falls. But what it'll do is it'll send you back to a save point. It autosaves quite frequently. I know Dragon Age, your whole party has to fall. But it's the same kind of thing. It goes back to a save point. And so the autosave feature becomes very important. So I'm wondering why, when the save feature got implemented in consoles, like in the late 80s, why that didn't start changing then. Because I seem to remember a lot of games, specifically if you like talking about shooters and things like that, platformers just kept using lives. You know, you collect bananas or hearts or little mans.
Yeah.
And like that collection became like its own thing, because I don't think a lot of arcade games had that collection aspect to having more lives, right? Because you're supposed to put in more money.
So exactly.
So that became like hard. The whole lives thing became hard coded. So I don't know when they would have shifted away from that model, to be honest. Do you have any?
Well,
ideas?
I mean, I think we can pretty much agree that you know, the Atari and Nintendo era were very much, you know, three guys you yeah. started with. Super Nintendo, I mean, other than RPGs, yeah, probably the same way. But let's see, what about Nintendo 64?
Okay, Mario still had lives.
Mario had lives, yeah.
Zelda, I don't think that there were any lives there, were there? Can you die in Ocarina
of Time? You can
die
in Zelda.
Yeah, you can die in Zelda. What's the consequence, though?
Well, like a lot of these games, I mean, I suppose the consequence would be losing and needing to start over, but if you saved it anywhere, that's where you'd start, you know?
Right, right. Well,
The consequence was more of an annoyance than anything else, meaning that you'd have to load a file.
Right. So, yeah, I'm thinking then, you know, it started changing when the consequences for dying changed. You know,
yeah.
Whether it's reverting to a different save file or just like putting you right back to where you were right before you made that choice, like adventure games would do this.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. Like somewhere along the way, dying didn't become the end of your game, but just became this kind of inconvenience.
Yeah, like it sort of taught you something about how you're supposed to play it, which is, well, I'm going to compare it to a card game. You ever played Mao?
No, I haven't.
If you think the point of playing Mao is to not get penalty cards, then you're going to end up frustrated and upset because you're not supposed to know what the rules are. I mean, the only rule I can tell you is this one. Crap. All right. So I've already given myself a penalty card. The point is...
Well, then I'm winning. Okay.
Yeah. the point is that you're learning by negative reinforcement, which is really what all games are, essentially. Yeah, by making game death a learning tool instead of a way to get you to stop playing, which is what originally it was for, then you can have a really good time suddenly, especially if the games don't take the death so seriously. You ever played the Journeyman Project series?
Yes, I have. I played the first one and a little bit of Buried in Time.
Oh, Buried in Time is like one of my favorite games of all time.
It's a good game.
Oh, man. But yeah, the first one especially... really took that like adventure, choose your own adventure type tack with the deaths, because you can die in kind of ridiculous ways, and that made me like really really enjoy the flavor of the game. But it wouldn't be the end, you know. You just end up right where you were right beforehand, essentially. So I'm trying to think of like what other games and like when, because that was like early mid 90s. Those games.
It was like post Myst, but not that far.
Oh, there it is. There it is. Myst. Myst was the first game I could think of where you could not die. You could
really?
Fail.
I imagine myself dying, but maybe that was
no.
out of boredom.
No. Oh, man.
Oh, no. Oh, okay. Sorry. No, I owned three different versions of Myst. I had it on my computer. I had it on my Atari Jaguar. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, that's right.
Wow.
Atari Jaguar. Yep.
Okay. I'm sorry. Did you have the CD attachment?
Yes, I did. The toilet bowl attachment. Yeah. Yes, I did. It doesn't work anymore. It broke a few years back, but
got to flush it.
Yeah, I had that. Ouch. I had that. Spent a lot of time in college with the virtual light machine on that thing. I mean, that was cool at the time.
Right.
You put in a CD and it creates this kind of virtual light show.
Nice.
Done by the guy who did, I don't know, the guy who's obsessed with llamas. What is it? Minter? I don't know. Jeff? Somebody. Anyway.
I honestly don't know what you're talking about.
His name's Jeff. Okay. Anyway.
Okay.
Hey. Yeah. Yeah, you listening right now, you know what I'm talking about. And you're a nerd. Okay. So Myst was, yeah, but Myst was one of the first non-death games. I think predating Myst was, I don't know, I gotta get the timing right exactly. Myst was like 95, right?
Yeah, it sounds about right.
Something like that. So,
because it was like one of the first Windows games, right?
But definitely predating it though, would be the original Monkey Island.
Ah, okay, right.
And that was a deathless game.
Interesting.
And that was a really good game.
Yeah, did it?
Did you play Monkey? Oh, do I even want to ask you this question? Did you play Monkey Island?
You don't want. No, I have no All excuse right. for that one, honestly.
Okay, you can still play it now. There's a lot of ways to play it. You can play it on your iPhone right now. You can you can pick up one of the collections and you can play it on your computer with the right. ScumVN
right.
thing. You can cut out monkeys made of paper and you can pretend that it's the game. No, wait, that one. But like there's a lot of. There's a lot of ways to play it right now. Really? None of them?
No. Although you did get me thinking about the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy text adventure game by Infocom.
Uh-huh.
Written by Douglas Adams. Isn't that lovely? I actually played it again because you can get Frotz on your iPhone.
Okay.
And there's a whole bunch of text adventure games that you can download that way. It's all free, and Hitchhiker's Guide is one of them. So I got it, and I played it, and it's essentially a deathless game also. There's a spot where you can die,
there's
but you're
unwinnable situations.
Yeah,
though.
There are unwinnable situations. But they're like any deaths you really have in the game, typically come in the form of using the improbability drive and ending up like in the identity of other characters, which I thought was a wonderful thing to do. Especially when I played it, like it was like early 90s when I actually got around to playing it. I think
that is such a funny game, and
wasn't it? Oh,
it's
so, good.
So many. People, okay, anybody listening to our podcast right now, there's a lot of ways to listen to that game. I play that game. I think
there was
it's either in public domain or really, really cheap these days.
Yeah, there was a graphic version the BBC put together for the 20th anniversary or something, 25th, I don't know.
That you can play online, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that's pretty cool. But like I said, you can get it on Frotz on your iPhone, and there's got to be other ways because...
there's a number of free legal ways to play it. Yeah. Find one of those and play it. I know it doesn't have any of them fancy schmancy graphics. but it was... if you like the books, I mean, just consider it that it's a book... you know what? That would be the type of thing that they should have as a Kindle app.
Yeah, right?
You know what I mean? That to tell you the truth, Kindle is the ultimate platform for that game.
Yeah, well, definitely. Oh, that would be wonderful. And since you'd probably be sitting there playing it for hours trying to figure out what the heck to do, like I couldn't remember how to defeat the ravenous bug-bladder beast of Trawl at first. I was like, I'm sure I didn't do this right. And then it dawned on me. It's just like the way you solve some of these puzzles is just so hilarious. Occasionally, though, like trying to get the babelfish... it's just incredibly annoying. But, yeah.
But, okay. So now that we're on adventure games. Okay, Sean, I think you had something to say about Leisure Suit Larry.
Oh, yeah. So in case you didn't hear this before, because I didn't edit it out, when you die in Leisure Suit Larry, you just get kind of popped off the assembly line. I don't think you start at the beginning of the game, but you do start at Well, maybe you just start at the very beginning. I'm not really sure, but you can. That's a game you can save and restart from a save point anyway. But it's just so funny because it takes this idea of having multiple lives, and literally Larry's on an assembly line that they put together. They're discarding the old ones that other gamers, potentially you or just other people in the world playing the game, have discarded through carelessness or VD or whatever. Yep. So it's just such a funny visual that you kind of just want to kill yourself at least once just to see it.
At least once. But then the 30th time you've died from forgetting to use your breath spray.
Or
that
a condom.
All right. You've gotten farther in the game than me.
I've beaten it. There's someone on Google Plus, I forgot what her name was, where her picture is of Eve, the last boss, quote unquote.
Yeah.
And I saw that, and I was just like, "Oh, I know what this is." And someone's like, "Oh, tell me."
You're a fan of Homestar Runner?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, good. I was worried we'd have to have a confession there. There's that one episode where the Strong Bad email, where he's getting the email from Allie and Allie's sister. You know the one?
Yes, Allie's sister. Yeah,
and both of them are depicted with two of the girls from the Leisure Suit Larry game.
Oh, right. I forgot. Yeah, I think it's from that screen where you had to put in a phone number so that it was a copy protection scheme where theoretically you could copy the game, but for some reason didn't know how to photocopy the manual. You had to enter this information in to make sure that you could actually log in. And there was also a quiz to see if you were old enough. It asked you questions about Spiro Agnew and what Shag Carpeting was for and things like that.
Oh yeah, but some of those were just it was there is hair on my whatever, and it was head, palms, or whatever. And the correct answer was lots of places.
Yep.
Oh man.
What's Ken Williams doing these days anyway?
Well, his wife Roberta Williams have retired. They don't do games anymore, which is unfortunate. Roberta Williams, an amazingly talented game producer, the King's Quest series, yep. And she did the Phantasmagoria or whatever, mm-hmm. which was ahead of its time. I mean, that thing shipped on seven CD-ROMs or something.
Nice,
but kind of a horror interactive movie type thing. I say ahead of its time, but I guess the interactive movie never really had its time.
Yeah. It's one of the things that CDs brought about that never really panned out. Even though I'm sure that Mighty Morphin Power Rangers game I have for Sega CD really, really tried.
No, not so much. No. Anyway.
All right. So here's a question. Are we better off for not having lives or life rule our gaming?
Are we better off for not having lives because we play video games? No.
Well,
that's South Park episode. How can you kill that which has no life?
Yes. Right. I'm wondering if there are any games I can think of that are just worse off for not having that scheme, because when you think about it, it's really you don't want to discourage someone from playing, because then you're not going to get the money from it. It's going to get panned, or now that there's this army of reviewers, and computers and the internet, it's you definitely want to make sure people can play your game as much as possible.
Well, that's the thing. The way games are played are different now. Games are not played to that you're going to replay sequences over and over to get better. What games really try to do now is give you just enough challenge where it feels like you're getting the thrill of having accomplished something, but without really having to replay sections. Do you know what I'm saying?
Sure. I mean, there's adventure games still do this, but there's parts where you can make a mistake, but it's not the consequences aren't life or death, literally.
Well, I mean, take any of the God of War type games or something like that. Sure. You might be replaying some sections a few times, but you're never replaying a whole level,
Sure.
Going to the beginning of something.
The way Prince of Persia: Sands of Time handles this, I think, is really fun because it's being told as someone actually telling a story.
Yeah.
And when you find out to whom, it's also really just a choice story twist. But every time you make a mistake like that or you die, it's always like, oh, it didn't happen like that. Wait, let me go back. And then, you don't start the game over. You just start like before you ended up getting killed, like the last.
Yeah, that one's really clever.
But that brings up a mechanic of changing time. And one game I know that does this to really great effect is Braid.
Ah, Braid. Oh, man. Okay. Here's our other shout out for today. Play Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and play Braid.
Mm-hmm. It was one of those games that was more than $10 when it came out, and people kind of complained. But I would pay $15 twice for that game. That's how worth it was to me.
Yeah. Anybody who got, I got it through the Humble Indie Bundle, which I think a lot of people did, and. It's too bad we can't plug the Humble Indie Bundle here because by the time this one comes out, it'll be done.
Yeah. Oh well.
But get on their mailing list because they have like it seems like about two a year now.
Mm-hmm.
And get on that because like the Humble Indie Bundle 2 had Braid, but if you bought the Humble Indie Bundle 3, you got Braid. You got all the stuff from the Humble Indie Bundle 2 for free. So.
Nice. Oh, wow. Okay.
So who knows? Maybe when the next one comes out, you can get it again. But if not, it's not that expensive. It's like at most $15, and it's worth every penny.
Yeah, yeah. Like any price you can pay for, it's worth it, honestly. But
just wait for it to go on sale on Steam. No, don't even wait. Pick it up now. Yeah. Give the developer a lot of money.
Yeah, get it on Xbox. Get it. Is it on PlayStation Network?
I'm not sure if it is yet, but okay. It would surprise me if it wasn't either there or coming to there. But like, it's like on Linux, it's on Mac, it's on Windows, it's on Xbox. I think there's an iPad version coming out, although I don't know how that would play.
Yeah, well, it could work.
Yeah,
but I mean, the reason we're singing its praises so much is just the way it's set up. It starts off as if it's like a regular platformer, but then it like. Very, very cleverly deconstructs like every trope about platforming, including having lives. There's no need for it in this game because you can always rewind time to prevent falling to your death. Which, it's such like an obvious thing. You wonder why it was never added in the game before. Honestly, well, it was in the case of Prince of Persia, but
that's really, really clever. Like I came into this game. With no knowledge of what the time travel effect, all I knew is people were talking about its praises, but I'm playing this and I'm like, this is just a side scroller. What's so great about that? Oh, he's wearing a tie. Ooh.
It's edgy.
And then
he's
all of a sudden
adult.
I hit this button and I'm like, wait a moment.
Right.
And you actually, you have to do selective death falls to clear your way to certain areas. It's a brilliant dynamic.
I think games have since kind of had to live up to that because that's when people kind of realize like, yeah, this is really silly. Why do we have to keep doing this in our games?
Yeah. The whole thing of having lives. I mean, the only time you see it now is in like retro games or like, you see it a lot in iPhone games these days because they're trying to do kind of that throwback to like arcade games and stuff, and that's right. one of the ways you can give it a bit of that authenticity is to give yourself some lives,
right?
But like in these big budget games, you have your life bar. I don't know though, which one is really more realistic though when you think about it. Like you're playing a first person shooter and you get shot a couple times in the face,
right.
And you hide behind some cover and your life bar slowly fills up again. I'm like, I like it because I'm really bad at games, but
yeah. Like if you're playing like a shooter, you're reincarnated basically over and over again while you're like doing a death match or something. And so there's like no penalty for dying other than sort of giving the other team points for having done it. So you know,
death isn't the handicap to have handicap it used to be in the olden days.
Yeah, right. Are you watching Torchwood, by the way? Speaking of not dying,
I haven't seen this week's episode, but I've been watching up till there. Oh. And I've been following the side story on the Torchwood app.
There's a I didn't even know about this.
It's updated every week.
We're a variable font of information about obscure things. That's
yeah,
wonderful.
You should get it. It's like every three chapters is like 99 cents, so the whole cost of the app by the end will be like $3. But it's really interesting. It's like graphic novel plus mini game type thing, telling like this side story. It's called a Web of Lies, I think. Web of something. Yeah, Torchwood app. Download it. I know it's for iPhone, but I would imagine something like that, probably Android as well. I just don't know.
I bring it up because the issue of living forever has its own ups and downs, as we find out with this story. Very interesting stuff. But it also makes me think of the inverse, where the goal is to die, or rather, you can't avoid death. So, like, the first one that comes to mind is Robot Unicorn Attack, where, you know, it even tells you on the title screen, you will fail. You know, you have the three lives, like we're talking about in arcade games. But
We've talked about Robot Unicorn Attack before.
I'm going to keep talking about it because it's amazing. Yeah. But even better than that, our game is like 5 minutes to kill yourself, where the point is to die, and you have a really hard time doing it.
That's made by Adult Swim, right?
It started
out as a web game, right?
Well, they're both Adult Swim games, that and Robot Unicorn Attack.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna bring one to the table as well.
Okay.
One of my favorite Japanese words, karoshi.
What does that mean?
It means like to work oneself to death. It's a very unique way of Japanese people dying.
Of course, the Japanese would have a specific word for that, and three syllables, no less.
Yes, of course. Like the Eskimos have like Inuits, which is what are we calling people? Indigenous people of the north. Anyway,
right.
So many different words for snow. Well, I guess Japanese have a – I mean, like, we have the word suicide, but Japan has, like, a lot of different – like, if it's double suicide, there's this word, and if it's ritual suicide, and if it's double ritual suicide, there's this word, too.
Wow.
If it's, like, double lover's ritual suicide, it's, like, shinju, and it's – there's, like, a lot. There's a whole vocabulary there.
Oh my god. Okay, so there's a game based around karoshi.
Well, I guess. I mean, it's not really. I mean, if it was really a game based off karoshi, it would be like you do paperwork until your character just kills himself. But
that's not a bad idea for a game.
it's more of a puzzle type platformer game where you're so fed up with work that before the day is done, you want to kill yourself. So you have to find, but seeing how it's Japan, everything's very safe, and things are, the society has made it hard to kill yourself, which is actually true of Japan. Like in no other country do they need to install these like special gates and things so people won't hurl themselves in front of trains. It's become such an inconvenience in Japan that in major suicide train jumping spots.
Right. It's not even the person dying that's the inconvenience. It's everyone else who can't get to work.
Oh, exactly. This train's been – well, like Japan takes its like trains very seriously. Like, I mean, you really can set your watch to them unless, of course, someone has jumped in front of it that day.
Oh, my goodness.
And then it throws the whole schedule off, and then the train conductor has to jump in front of a different train, and it's just because he's so shamed, and you know it's a really long spiral of jumping in front of trains.
Oh dear.
But in Japan, you know, things like that, or like in China, that one factory that makes like Foxconn, they installed nets on the sides of the buildings because they had people jumping off. so often.
That's insane. Yeah. So yeah, but, there's all kinds of safety devices. There's like baby proof stuff. There's like safety caps.
It's really
medicine.
Like they just don't want us to kill ourselves anymore. So anyway, in this game, you have to maneuver your way with levers and switches and stuff in order to make spikes fall on you, or you fall on spikes, or, you know, get crushed by something. You know, stuff a Japanese guy's got to think about.
Yeah, because, you know, those spikes don't just loft themselves, and they don't just get protected by anyone. Wait, what?
Now you need to play Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Yep. You need to play Braid. You probably need to play Robot Unicorn Attack. Yeah. Karoshi, if you've played all the rest of those, give it a try. But it's probably not up in that same category there.
Right.
It is very interesting, and most versions of it are either free or almost free.
And you can play Battletoads if you want, but the goal isn't to actually try to actually want to kill yourself.
Did you ever play Battletoads versus Double Dragon?
A little bit. I was never really a huge Double Dragon fan.
Who even made that? Was that actually Rare who did that?
I don't know. Well, I mean, Rare was a second party by that point,
right? It's hard to
tell
because I wasn't collecting a bunch of things in it, so I couldn't tell if it was a Rare game.
Oh, man. You know, Rare back in the day, it's cute. All right, for more, you should see our Rare Games Denshi mail.
Yeah,
but Rare is like one of those companies like back in the day that I would have liked to have worked for if I had been English and not in high school.
For more on wanting to become English, please see our Operation Rainfall podcast.
Right. If only I weren't region locked.
With these games, I don't know. I guess we haven't come to – I think lives work well in certain types of games.
Yeah, yeah. They still do. And this will be around, I think.
I think so, because there are certain types of games that – well, what's a game that you played recently that had lives?
There was this Bullet Hell game that we're testing out for the GeekCon. That was –
was it like Death Smiles or something?
I don't remember the name of it, but shoot. Zerst would know. Hey, Zerst. There you go. Shout out right there. And to GeekCon, so hey. I'm actually having a hard time thinking of a particular title that would work well with that. Do you have any ideas?
Well, of course, you know, anytime you're doing a retro game, something that was meant to use lives, like a bullet hell shooter or something like that, you know, you need to give those. But in the same way, what you're doing there is not giving lives so much as you're giving chances.
Sure.
So I think any game that you have a certain number of chances, they're not lives, but I mean, look at a game like this is a bad example, but Angry Birds.
Oh yeah.
You don't get one bird, you get a certain number of birds. Right. I don't know if you can really call those lives.
That's a good example, because you know, just like having multiple lives, sometimes the goal is to not use them all up. You know, they give you certain kinds in a certain sequence, but you're occasionally encouraged to improve upon that because you don't get the maximum number of points, the maximum number of stars, unless you don't use them all up.
That's true. And I think endless runner games Robot Unicorn Attack is a good example, or like Run Like Hell, or any of the numerous, endless runners that's available for... you know, the iPhone. I think multiple lives works well there because it saves you having to... I mean, when you have a game like that, you pretty much start at the beginning again, but it saves you having to, you know, go through all the title screens and everything again for a game that, you know, can be ended in a number of seconds rather than minutes, you know?
Right, right. And, you know, shooters, of course, or any game where the object is killing, because you can't have multiple lives if you can't kill anything.
Exactly. I don't know, but like, there are still games that use lives, but it's not lives so much as kind of a respawn. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
Like, if you're doing multiplayer for any first-person shooter, you've got lots of lives, but you don't, you know, you don't have a number of them.
It depends. You can like do Firefight and Halo, and you only have so many to go with.
Oh, I suppose. But you know, those are lives. When you re-enter or respawn,
right,
something like that,
right?
And in that case, those games, I don't know. I don't think it would be as fun if once you died, you know, were out of it for permanently.
Right, right. I just can't think of a game that's where that still uses like some kind of life system but doesn't need to anymore. I think it's pretty well fallen along the lines of the games that need them will use them. The ones that don't, avoid them. It seems that way.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I mean, I think, you know, New Super Mario Bros. Wii is one of the few modern console games that uses, you know. But in a way, that's kind of a retro throwback, even though it's a new game, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
It makes sense. It makes sense to have lives in a game like that because, you know, it's not moody Mario with CGI cutscenes, you know, talking about his hard life, you know. You know, and you know, it's lighthearted, you know, Mario 2 hits you're dead type stuff, you know.
Yeah, it's
what
it's,
about New Contra?
I don't think I've played it.
Contra 4 on the DS? That had lives.
Nope. Okay.
But I mean that made sense because again, that was kind of styled like the original games were.
Right, right. Yeah, I think it's pretty rare to see that now. Like to have a game that you've maybe played a whole lot, but it's just so hard you can't get past a certain part. And then, like, you know, you walk in or, like, watch a YouTube video and be like, oh, I never made it to that part before because I've never been able to, you know, I have not been able to get through the challenges or, like, be good enough or just have the skill you're supposed to build up that Killian's supposed to be in. Have the multiple lives is supposed to sort of instill in you because you just give up, you just get fed up. Like, you don't have games that you get fed up with anymore. If you have games with stories,
not so much.
You know, like the point is to finish the story.
That's very true. I don't think I've gotten fed up with a game forever. You just get bored.
Yeah, there's not a lot of games I really get bored with either. Like, there's puzzle games. Like, I played Peggle obsessively for a while, then I just sort of stopped.
Yeah.
For instance, you know, there's no lives in that, just retries because those games are short, right?
So. Yeah.
Yeah, that is really true, isn't it?
This is the thing. Now, I remember when I was a kid, I think I once spent a couple days, like an entire weekend playing Mega Man 2. Do you know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
Like an entire weekend playing it. But like I've seen these playthrough videos or, you know, and it's like people like beating the game in like 20 minutes. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you're looking at it and you go, you know what? The game's actually a lot shorter than you remember, you know?
It's just so difficult. Like, remembering how to jump here and, like, learning the sequence of bosses to go through. Yeah.
And, I mean, not to sound like an old fuddy-duddy, but, like, kids don't know these things anymore.
No, it's like, absolutely true.
Like, kids today, I don't know, you put one of those games in front of them, I think they're going to give up before they learn it, you know?
Yeah, somewhere games went from being hard to where if you can't get past it, they went to being bad. I'm not sure where that transition happened, but that's I think that's why lives... I'm not sure what's like chicken and the egg thing. Like, I don't know if like lives went away and then people started thinking, oh, this is a bad game, or people started losing patience with those games, and they're like, maybe we should take out the lives. You know, that'll help things. I'm not sure. Maybe it was kind of both.
But, like, beating a Mega Man game was such an accomplishment.
Oh, definitely.
It was so hard. I think I've only beat, like, two or three Mega Man games.
Yeah, they've designed them so that, you know, that last sprint toward the Wily stage or whatever, you had to go do the whole thing, and it's like a multi-part affair. You can't get a password code for the middle of a Wily stage. You know, you just...
Oh, my gosh. Sean, let's our next podcast. Let's talk about Mega Man.
All right, sounds good.
I love Mega Man.
Yeah,
I just love Mega Man.
That'll be good because I don't think I've played any of the non Nintendo ones.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, you got a week.
All right. not to mention that Mega Man Legends 3 got canceled, so that'd be a good reason to bring it up.
That's a hard blow. And I think we should also bring up since we've been talking about this Project Rainfall stuff, there's a grassroots movement to bring that one back too. And let's talk about that next week.
All right, sounds good. So, verdict on lives?
I think gamers should get them. And girlfriends too. Oh, sorry. Sorry. No. I'm just kidding. Singles better. You have more time to play video games. But I think they filled a necessary need. You know, a necessary need. Wow, that's really redundant. They filled a need, but I don't think they're needed for most types of games that people play anymore.
Yep.
And that's the main thing. Games that needed lives don't exist. People don't make them anymore, except maybe for like handheld platforms.
Sure.
But like when you had a side scroller, I mean, other than Braid, which doesn't need them because for awesome reasons discussed earlier.
Yes.
No one's making like the big budget platformer anymore. There's indie games that are still being made, and they often use lives. But the type of games we have these days are like racing games, where you make a career more than having individual lives.
Right, right.
First-person shooters, which I guess have... I mean, when you play single-player, you have the one life. And when you play multiplayer, you respawn.
Right.
I don't know. Games like God of War or something like that, maybe that they could do it. But like, in order to make it so that you'd actually need those lives and that there was a reason to conserve them, the game would have to be longer and harder. Or your life bar for your character would have to be a lot smaller. But I don't know. Like, I don't know if it would do anything to really enhance the game.
Mm-hmm.
Although I gotta say that there was something very satisfying when you're playing a game and you got enough points or you found the one up.
Yeah. Yep.
Do you know what I mean? Because well, yeah, it wasn't like
it's the whole collecting mentality.
It was like
right?
It was like another chance at life, you know?
And you've earned it, right?
You've
exactly. done something important. Like you've learned the turtle tap and you've cheated death to the point where it can no longer touch you.
Oh man. Lives in that respect. Putting in the Konami code and getting 30 lives to start
mm-hmm.
out with.
Mm-hmm.
That was good times when you were an unskilled game player at the age of 10. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That was good. And that's another thing I'd like to podcast about, that cheat codes don't really exist anymore. And that makes me sad.
There's no need for them. Although I've noticed that the new Mortal Kombat still has those like three bars underneath your character. For yep. something. I don't even know what those are ever used for, to be honest, but they're still there.
Advertising purposes. I'm sure Google's gonna put ads there. But no, but that's the thing though. Cheat codes have gone away from to become downloadable content.
I was going to say, and yeah, paid DLC is the new cheat yeah. code.
But anyway, I wanna talk about that one a little more and talk about This isn't really related to this podcast, but if any of you have got any favorite codes from games that you've played, send us an email. We'd like to mention those in one of our upcoming podcasts.
And if you can think of any, if you think you know where that dividing line is between when the game started not having lives or, you know, ones that you think may do better or worse for having or not having them, also drop us a line. I mean, we got Twitter. There's our website, so you can like send us an email. You can comment on any of our podcast pages or call us. I think we forgot to mention the phone number last week, but it's
we did
608-492-1923. You can call us and leave us a message.
And that call is free if you call from work.
It's also in the U.S. for those who do listen outside the country, and I know you exist, Adam. But actually, I'm not even sure if Adam does listen, but he's outside the country, so I figured I'd name drop him.
I'm outside the country.
Good point. So you couldn't call me. That's what Skype's
for. That's true. That's true.
So yeah, good show this week. We'll try and do Mega Man. If we don't, they're going to be really upset with us, so I guess we better keep our word, huh?
Well, I mean, next week it's going to be either Mega Man or the codes one. But either way, this month we got to do Mega Man.
All right, sounds good. August is gonna rock.
It's so hot outside. All right. Well, with that, those of us with lives have got to get to that stuff.
Okay, well, you have fun with that.
All right. Talk to you later.
Next week.
Famicom Dojo.
Oh, that's something else we should probably mention, now that I'm thinking about it, is I am the head of the video game room for GeekCon in Madison, Wisconsin. So,
okay.
And we're also doing sort of Omegathon-like challenge called the Geek Console Challenge. So some of these games we have mentioned may show up there.
I think we should do a Karoshi LARP.
Karoshi LARP.
Okay, anyway.
So, sorry. To finish the plug, that's September 9th through 11th. So 10-year anniversary of 9/11. Yay!